Chapter 29, The Shortest Letter in the New Testament. All readers of this book know that the shortest verse in the Bible is Jesus wept. And all readers know that the shortest chapter is the 117th Psalm, which is very near to the longest chapter, the 119th Psalm. But how many of you know which is the shortest letter in the Bible and who wrote it? Do you think it is Philemon or Jude or 2 John or 3 John, each of which has only one chapter? You may take your Bibles and see, if you like, which of these four is the shortest. None of them are very long, but the shortest letter in the Bible is none of these. You will find it, if you look very closely, in the 16th chapter of the epistle written by Tertius and the 22nd verse. Is it possible that you cannot find it? It is really there. Are there some of you who did not remember that Tertius wrote a book of the Bible? Then you are about to learn something, for this chapter is about the epistle Tertius wrote, which is a long and very important epistle, and also about this shortest epistle about which we have been speaking. This is not a sermon, but we will take a text. The text is this: I, Tertius, who wrote this epistle, salute you in the Lord. So you see, there can be no doubt that Tertius did really write an epistle. The most obdurate higher critic cannot doubt testimony like this. So please look up the epistle that Tertius wrote, and when you have found the text, we will proceed. Meantime, let me tell you how great an epistle this one is. You will not find it between Philemon and Jude. It is one of the longer epistles. Nor is it classed with the Antilegomena, if you know what that is. Of no book in the Bible is opinion more nearly unanimous than concerning this. And all admit not only the authenticity, but the importance of the work. There are whole libraries of books written about this one epistle. It has been declared the greatest literary effort of the human mind. Important volumes have been written about single verses of it. A million sermons, more or less, have been preached upon it. Calvin, Luther, Wesley, all the great leaders have reveled in it. The New Testament contains no more important epistle. If anywhere in the Bible we have a philosophy of religion, it is in this book. And yet, is it possible that some reader is still hunting for it among the minor prophets? That is not the place to find it. You will save time by beginning with the New Testament epistles and reading straight through till you come to it. It will not be enough that you read the titles. You will not find it there. But if you read the epistle itself, you will find it in the very first one. I, Tertius, who wrote this epistle, salute you in the Lord. The epistle of Tertius is the epistle to the Romans. Tertius was not the sole creator of the epistle to the Romans. Paul had a share in the work. Paul dictated it, and Tertius wrote it at his dictation. A mere stenographer, I hear you say. Why mere? Is it nothing to be a stenographer for such an undertaking? But for the stenographer, the epistle might never have been written. For some reason, we are not sure what, Paul seems never to have written one of his own epistles. So far as we can judge, he dictated them all. In prison, he was in chains and could not easily have written. But the epistle to the Romans was not written from prison. Yet this, and others of his earlier epistles, were dictated. Whether he suffered from weak eyes or from some nervous disorder has been debated by scholars. We do not know the reason, but we know the fact. It was Paul's custom to dictate, not to write. We do not know why, but this we know, that when Paul was ready to write the greatest of his letters, Tertius was there. Tertius was a member of the little church in Corinth. He was a clerk or copyist of some sort and worked on a salary. He probably was not the proprietor of a business. On the other hand, he probably was not, like some copyists, a slave. He could control his time. And one day, or several parts of days, when he had time of his own, he gave himself to the work of taking Paul's dictation. For Paul had something that he wanted to write and needed help. Of course he did, I hear you say. Anyone would be glad of such an honor. But that is just the point. Tertius had no idea that it was an honor. It was not easy to take Paul's dictation. His sentences were long and involved. His technical terms were many. It was hard work to follow his dictation. And Tertius never suspected that the letter would get beyond the people first addressed, the little congregation at Rome. If he had known how great an honor would be his, that would have spoiled it all. The gladdest moment of heaven will be that of bewildered joy when the righteous answer, saying, "Lord, when saw we thee hungry and fed thee?" They only did their duty and never suspected the honor. Neither did Tertius. I do not know what other thing Tertius might have done that day, and so cannot measure the sacrifice. It was perhaps as pleasant a thing as that which you shall next give up, that you may give a holiday to the work of the church or to the helping of someone in need. And Tertius had no more idea that the world would know it than you have. That is why the lesson is so good for you. Paul was struggling to give utterance to the doxology with which the epistle closes. He had a thought so great he could not easily compass it within the limitations of grammatical form. Even as finished, it is not quite grammatical. Paul was revolving this wonderful word of benediction in his mind when Tertius said to him, "I wish you would let me write something. There's something I would like to say." "Very well," Paul may have said. "If you have any word to add, Tertius, write it down while I get this closing thought into form." Face to face with the privilege of uttering his message, Tertius found that he had no great thoughts like those of Paul. He could not explain the mysteries of law and grace. He was not a man of great mind, just a common everyday sort of man with a task in life that offered few opportunities, if any, for greatness. But that fact did not deter him from saying what he could. He let those Romans know, and the world, that the writing of the letter had not been the pay task of a time server, but the loving contribution of a fellow Christian. And he sent his own little message of affection along with Paul's. Paul has no claim to the authorship of this little epistle of 11 words. All its authorship and inspiration belong to Tertius. He was not only a stenographer, but, to the extent of 11 words, an author. Like a fly embalmed in amber, his own little epistle is preserved in that of Paul, and the letter of Paul is all the more precious because of it. There was a third person to whom we are indebted for the epistle to the Romans. That is Phoebe. Phoebe was a member of the church in Cenchrea, near Corinth. It was her visit to Rome on business that occasioned the letter. I was not there and have no actual report of the conversation, but I imagine it to have been something like this. Phoebe was telling Paul about her trip and saying how she expected to miss the church and the home friends and how she dreaded going among strangers. Paul said, or may have said, "You will be missed here, Phoebe. You have been a helper of many and of mine own self also. But you will not be wholly among strangers in Rome. There are good Christians there. I will write to them and say, 'I commend unto you Phoebe, our sister, who is a servant of the church that is at Cenchrea, that ye receive her in the Lord, worthily of the saints, and that ye assist her in whatsoever matter she may have need of you. For she herself also hath been a helper of many, and of mine own self.'" I am sure Phoebe thanked him and said, "I know they will ask me many questions about you and your teaching. I am afraid I cannot tell them all they want to know. I fear I have not understood all your sermons. I wish you would write a letter to go with my letter of introduction and tell them the things they will be asking me." Paul may have said, "It has not been my custom, Phoebe, to write to churches that I have not founded. I have a principle that forbids my building on another's foundation. Moreover, I do not write unless I have an amanuensis." When Paul gave that second reason, Phoebe knew that she had won the day, and she said, or may have said, "I'll go and get Tertius. All you need to do is to add a little theology to my letter of introduction." I do not pretend to know that this was precisely the way it came about, but the greatest of human undertakings, even those inspired by the Lord, have their ordinary beginnings and relate themselves to very commonplace events. And that would not have been either an unworthy or an improbable way for the letter to have begun. Indeed, it is evident that it was Phoebe's journey that occasioned the letter, and it was Phoebe who delivered it. No doubt Phoebe was seasick. It was a long voyage to Rome, and a perilous one. Paul himself was shipwrecked on his way there a little later. I do not know through what perils Phoebe bore the letter, nor how her business prospered. I am sure she met the Christians, for they received the letter, and so I have no doubt they helped her. But we do not know the details. All we know is that whatever fidelity and sacrifice were necessary to the delivery of the letter did not fail. Phoebe was faithful. Paul, Tertius, Phoebe, these are the three people who produced the letter to the Romans, and each one in his own sphere was essential to the enterprise. I do not affirm that each part was of equal honor. It is enough that each was essential to the undertaking. In this very letter, Paul said, "Having then gifts differing according to the grace that is given to us," and the rest. Three Pauls could not make so good an epistle as one Paul, one Tertius, and one Phoebe. Three times Paul set forth this doctrine with great emphasis, one in Romans 12, again in Ephesians 4, and still again in 1 Corinthians 4. Paul never needed any help in composing his epistles, but he had constant need of those whose humbler but important service made his vast labors effective. It would have amazed Tertius to know that he would be remembered for 1,800 years, and that his labor would be used as an illustration of fidelity. Phoebe would blush with confusion if she knew that her name had come down the ages. But both these faithful disciples of Christ, by their humble and devoted efforts, made their names immortal. If Tertius could write another letter now, he might have little more to say of theology than he had before. But I imagine he would write something like this. Or, at least I imagine this is the message which we may read between the lines of his little epistle. I, Tertius, who gave up a holiday to do a humble task, and awoke in heaven with surprise to find that it had made my name immortal, salute in the Lord all whose work is humble but necessary, the toiler in the home or church whose fame comes not to public notice. And this I say to you in the bonds of the fellowship of those who perform humble tasks faithfully. Ours, too, is the glory of a share in earth's largest and holiest undertakings. In the sight of God, we are partners with the greatest of earth's benefactors. Wherefore, let us, whose toil is seen only by him who seeth in secret, work faithfully, and ours shall be a good conscience, and in the end, an unexpected share in the glory and immortal life.